Station 11, awash in red-winged blackbirds. A truth is not just a fact, not just a name. A truth cannot be reduced to aphorism or formula. Truth is, instead, something alive, embodied, and both expressive of something profound, yet often, to some degree, inexpressible. In a wonderfully sharp essay, Children in the Woods, Barry Lopez talks about how the easiest door to open in nature with children is to tell them the name of all the things. But he says this only opens them to the smallest room. Consider the names of the creeks, for example. Voisin and Detweiler, Beaver and Strasbourg, and also School and Laurel and Montgomery and Sandrock and. These names reveal one sort of truth. They name into existence waterways on settlement maps. But these names point to a superficial understanding of interactions in space. If we focus only on the names of these creeks, it becomes easier to lose the thread, lose the connection to the geological, archaeological, and sensual layers of meaning that these creeks hold. There's so much more to draw our attention and care if we but take the time to notice. We can move beyond names to dwell more intimately in this place, to feel the wind, smell the ground and what's living in it, hear the water moving, imagine the aliveness that's happening under the ground on which we stand. Which brings us back to Barry Lopez. He writes, "The door that leads to the cathedral is marked by a hesitancy to speak at all, rather to encourage by example a sharpness of the senses."
That's what I'm after, a sharpness of the senses. I want to learn new ways of experiencing this landscape, feeling it in my body. Looking, after all, is not quite the same as seeing, Sid reminded me. Listening and hearing aren't entirely synonymous either. The deliberate work of collecting field recordings along the creek is certainly helping in this regard. The act of using a Zoom recorder is a revelation into the space of sound around me. Those microphones pick up, for example, the orchestral overlay of birdsong, the particular timbre of wind moving through pine needles, the wavelengths of vibration through the atmosphere. Hearing the living land in this way offers an entryway to understanding space and of how my body moves through it. From recording trips around the world, audio ecologist Gordon Hempton has found that each habitat has a fundamental tone and sense of space. Likewise, what happens in a particular place will alter its biophony, the term that Bernie Krause uses to describe the accumulated sound generated by all the living beings in a place. This surely is no surprise. No other spot of Earth is like this one, nor that one. Sometimes, though, only our human ears will do. This past March, while out tracking and recording the movement of water under the Iron Horse Trail, Sid, Erica, and I paused just below the CN Rail Bridge near Belmont Village. Someone needed to tie a shoelace, maybe? And while we all paused a moment, we suddenly heard it in the wind. A distinctive musical whistling overhead, wind whipping through the track and ties and steel grating, a climbing and descending keynote that matched the shifting velocity of air through the fluting sound chamber of the rail bridge. We stood motionless, like stones in the stream, while bikers and dog walkers gave us birth. Huddling close, we opened our coats to wrap Sid's Zoom mic and try to hold off the wind to capture the recording of this strange music. But as with many things of rare and unexpected beauty, the marvel refused its own recording. The very wind that made the song macerated the mic. What our ears could hear in the flesh degenerated into a mash of white noise on the monitoring headphones. A few days later, the three of us were walking the length of Schneider Creek, testing out the day's urban hike we would take others on 2 months later. Just off Huron Road, during one of the first truly warm days of the year, we walked through a bower of red-winged blackbirds. Dozens of them, sounding like hundreds of them, calling thousands of times into the lightest greening of spring. We stood awash in their wetland song, a musical trilling others have transcribed as conclerie. Sid gently slipped the headphones on and immediately, eyes closed, slipped off into a kind of standing prayer. Erica turned in amazement at the flitting, red-feathered movements in the trees around us. I stood still, eyes on the gravel at my feet, ears open as wide as could be in order to hear, to feel the whole melting week of winter brimming forward with the migratory song of these new returnees.